I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Seattle police making arrests in Chinatown, finally. But at the same time, the illicit drug market only took days to reappear after the World Cup in downtown Seattle. Plus, next time you see someone posting on one of your neighborhood pages in support of the income tax on millionaires, you might want to check to make sure it isn't a bot. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. I can't believe my eyes. Is it true Seattle police being allowed to make arrests in Chinatown? I wouldn't believe it if Jonathan Cho hadn't caught it on video.
May I ask what's going on here?
There's two people under arrest.
Is it for open air drug use?
It is.
It is, okay. All right, looks like SPD is making arrests for open air drug use. To start. A lot of these young kids, not even from this neighborhood, let alone Seattle, now being picked up for open-air drug use.
So that, at least what Jonathan Cho was told at the scene, but as you can see, even if they arrested a couple people for open-air drug use, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of others who they need to arrest as well. And look, not the first thing that anyone wants is for people who are addicted to drugs to be in jail. I think that we want them to get the help they need. I want police going after drug users or drug dealers as well, certainly, but that is a prolific problem in Chinatown, specifically Little Saigon, that has plagued the city increasingly so for the last 5 years. And all those people were pushed there. You know, it's kind of sad that you're seeing those arrests made now, after the World Cup, when Chinatown was protesting and begging city leaders to clean up 12th and Jackson during the World Cup so they could get some positive foot traffic in the area. But, you know, if they're deciding to do it now, I think that's a testament to the fact that Chinatown has been trying to stand up for itself and say it's racist to continue to push all the drug addicts and homeless people into our neighborhood. Now, while that's a positive development, what did we say on the show earlier this week? We were talking about the World Cup ending. And what did Bob Ferguson say? Oh, my gosh. People were visiting Seattle and said it was the cleanest downtown in America, the best, most vibrant downtown in America. And I said, look, Seattle had a great time hosting the World Cup. I think it was A+. But I said, I give it days before the drug addicts and the open air markets of stolen goods are back at 3rd and Pike. What has it been? Four days. Here's what it looked like last night. Our friend Ari Hoffman says, a listener sent me these pictures taken tonight at 3rd and Pine in downtown Seattle. So technically, it was barely 48 hours after the last match in town. The drug scene has already returned. They said 3rd and Pine, worse than I've seen it in a very long time. And there you have it. It looks exactly like it did. And if you look in really closely at that image, you can see what they tried to do to 3rd and, this is 3rd and Pike, I think, specifically. They tried to, you know, there's all these boarded up windows. So they board them up. They paint the boards black to make it look not so bad, because this was for World Cup fans, right? Beautifying the city. And then they put artwork on it. Well, I'll tell you what, that artwork doesn't mean anything. It doesn't look very nice when there's a bunch of drug users hunched over or shooting drugs into their veins in front of it. And so it doesn't take a rocket scientist. This happens every freaking time. Just over 48 hours. All the World Cup traffic is gone, the positive foot traffic for businesses, and it's just back to how it was. It happened after the MLB All-Star Game. This is not a surprise. And who pays the price? The productive members of society pay the price for this political ineptitude, for this political cowardice. Again, our friend Jonathan Cho, he has really been covering the plight of the Chinatown International District better than anyone else. And they have businesses there closing on a regular basis because there's drug users in their alcoves. Here's another video.
You're like, have your pants down. You're putting all this easy cheese on the ground. Come on, man. Look at this. This little basement entrance is now turned into a drug den.
One of our major anchor restaurants has closed. That's Joyelle. We used to have many banquets here. I had many dinners here. It was a place for community to gather and to celebrate. So it's very sad to hear that the owners focusing their efforts elsewhere outside of the CID.
Why? Do you know why?
We're right next to Dolphin Jackson.
So it's due to all the open air drug use and crime. You guys are smoking fentanyl on private property.
Yeah, it was Tanya Wu, and the look on her face when he says, why? She goes, because of all the drug addicts, 12th and Jackson, of course. Because it doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that these things are bad for business. Crime is bad for business. Disorder is bad for business. I mean, can we just one sec go back to that picture last night, 3rd and Pine? I mean, who would open a business there again? I mean, you go between on 3rd Avenue between Pike and Pine and you count the number of vacant storefronts. Nobody's doing business there. And just this week, I mean, not only Jonathan talked about that restaurant that closed, that Anchor restaurant in Chinatown ID, we've also gotten word of the Five Guys in Ballard closing, the Lake Forest Park Bar and Grill, West Seattle's Great American Bar, Elul Cellars on Capitol Hill, two Chef Brandon McGill restaurants in Seattle are closing. I mean, wake up. Wake up. Open up your Redfin app. Look at all the homes on the market for sale. Look at all the businesses that are closing. Yet what is the focus of our elected leaders? They continue to try to not only not help the job creators and the contributors to society, but to actively punish them and hurt them. Just one example of this. What is Katie Wilson doing? She has a press conference yesterday with the city attorney, both of them socialists, talking about more regulations on landlords, more ways to try to make it nearly financially impossible to provide housing to people in the city of Seattle, to own a rental unit in the city of Seattle. Their latest thing that they're targeting, what they call junk fees. They could say they're hidden junk fees. So they want to get rid of things like appliance charges, pet rent, you know, additional fees if you have a pet, for instance, fees for using or for having common areas in some of these, you know, more upscale apartments. So things that they call junk fees, things that they call junk fees. And this is after so many different policies, you know, rent control statewide in the state of Washington, you know, limiting the types of background checks, the first in time ordinance. It's made it so difficult for anyone for it to be financially feasible to have a rental unit, even one or 100, it doesn't matter. Here's Katie Wilson at this press conference yesterday.
And this is a pattern that we're seeing not just in rental housing, but across our economy, where irresponsible actors are nickel and diming ordinary people, finding sneaky ways to add on a fee here, a fee there, whether that's when you buy an airplane ticket or a concert ticket. And with renters, that hits you where it matters most, your home, the thing that you need most to have a stable and dignified life. So this legislation is about fixing that problem and creating predictability and transparency for renters across Seattle.
No, that's not what it's about. This is about getting closer to the socialist utopia of taking private property from people and putting it in the hands of the government. I mean, she's this close to having a press conference saying what Mamdani said in New York about if you're a bad landlord, we're going to seize your property and we're going to use it for the public good. She's a socialist. That's what she wants. That's what socialists want. That's what socialists do. Here's Seattle City Attorney Erica Evans.
Banning junk fees is common sense. It sends a clear message to bad landlords that if you decide to come to Seattle to pad your pockets, to nickel and dime renters here in our city, we're going to hold you accountable. Yeah. That's right. And if you do that, my office is going to take you to court. Yeah. And you're going to have to pay. You're going to have to pay the city of Seattle. You're going to have to pay the renters that you took money from. You're going to have to pay up to 3 times the amount of the unlawful fees that you collected. So let me be clear to those bad landlords. You exploit our renters. We'll see you in court. And you're going to be the one to pay, because that is what real accountability looks like.
For her to say, Oh, you think you can come here and get rich and pad your pockets as a landlord? I promise you, ma'am, there is not a landlord in America. There is not a housing provider, a builder, and developer in America who still believes that they can come to Seattle and pad their pockets and get rich. Maybe at one point they thought that, not anymore. They can't even make money off their rental units. They can't even make money off their buildings. And for her to say that's what real accountability looks like, let me show you what accountability looks like. Watch this for a second. So there's somebody
speaking,
right?
My name is Sonatina Sanchez.
I want you to pay attention
to what's happening in
the background.
I started renting my home in 2010 from Capitol Hill Housing, now Community Roots Housing. A few years ago, CRH closed our building manager's office, and we were told now we had to drop rent at the main office, mail it in, or pay electronically. All of these options cost extra fees, on top of buying a money order, which many of our residents have to do due to their lack of banking.
In case you're just listening to the show today, in the middle of the press conference, before the press can actually ask questions, Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson and City Attorney Erica Evans sneak out. They sneak out the side. Can we watch that again in the background? Oh, hey, you know, we got really important stuff for you to do. Why don't you get out before the media can ask any questions? Is it okay if I just sneak you out the side? We don't want the reporters to ask any questions. And you know what? Some really loony people are going to come up to the microphone pretty soon. So, oh, hey, do you want to leave, Erica? Yeah, we got really important stuff to do. Let's get out of here. Sneak, 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 sneak. They never came back. They never came back. She's talking about this is real accountability. How many times has Seattle's mayor snuck out of press conferences or announcements before anyone could ask a question and reporters are trying to chase them down? That's what their version of accountability looks like. So I think it's because they wanted to avoid the questions that the media would have for them. But it also could be that at that point in the press conference, some real loony people started to get up to speak.
Currently live in a Seattle Housing Authority building, Harvard Court. SHA is just starting to roll out a fee of $250 for every false fire alarm that goes off in the building that causes the fire department to have to come out.
This is the city of Seattle.
What do we need?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it is Looney Tunes. These are the people who are influencing policy in the city of Seattle. And so maybe Katie Wilson and Erica Evans are like, well, we said what we had to say. Let's get out before people start to take the microphone and look ridiculous. But they look ridiculous sneaking out, and they didn't answer any questions from reporters. They have this policy that's going to worsen the housing crisis, that's going to scare out the contributors of society like they have been doing for 10 years. And they can't answer any questions about it. And I mean, I could play on loop a whole montage of Katie Wilson sneaking out of the back door, calls the press there, oh, come listen to what I have to say, but I don't want you to ask me questions, because she's a socialist. She wants state-run media. That's what socialists do. Socialists and communists want state-run media where they can control the questions and can control the narrative. For now, she's not able to get that, although I would say Seattle media is pretty damn close to being state-run media. I mean, they're just going to lob her softballs anyway. But she can't even handle the softballs because she is so damn out of her depth. So yeah, this is what Seattle is. I mean, I don't see it changing anytime soon. They let the drug users and drug dealers and criminals run rampant and fill back in on 3rd and Pine. They arrested a couple in Chinatown. We'll see if that leads to anything. And then at the same time, all they do is make life more difficult for the contributors, for the creators in our society. And that has never worked in the history of time ever. All right, coming up next, Attorney General Nick Brown gets on camera and just tells some easily verifiable falsehoods about illegal aliens and their ability to vote in our state. We'll take him to task for that coming up next. First, could the market's biggest blind spots impact your retirement portfolio? So you got the headlines out there. What are they talking about? AI, crypto tech, what's happening in Iran, etc. But you want to make sure there's nothing that the market is missing or not addressing that could put your retirement portfolio at risk. So join Bulwark Capital, Zach Abraham, for his free Market Blind Spot webinar, July 23rd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can have your questions answered. And Zach will go over, of course, how Bulwark Capital is always looking for opportunities to lower your risk, lower your cost, give you as much upside as possible. So join his Market Blind Spot webinar happening July 23rd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. It's live. totally free. Register right now, knowyourriskpodcast.com. While you're there, you can also subscribe to Zach's daily podcast and follow him across social media platforms. Again, go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, the Department of Justice has put some blue state election officials on notice, basically saying, hey, if you don't try to crack down on illegal aliens or people who aren't allowed to vote, registering to vote and voting, then we're going to hold you personally accountable. Of course, we had the letter yesterday. This is from Fox 13. DOJ threatens to prosecute law election officials over alleged non-citizen votes. So, you know, we could go back and forth on this issue forever, but there's been a lot of tit for tat. The federal government doesn't think certain blue states in particular are doing enough to really make sure that their voter rolls are clean. They've asked for voter data. The state of Washington, as an example, won't provide them with certain voter data that the federal government says it needs in order to do a thorough search and make sure there aren't a bunch of illegal aliens or otherwise non-qualified voters on our voter rolls. So now they're basically saying, look, if you don't comply with our demands and it turns out that people are voting illegally or whatever it is, Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, we're going to hold you personally accountable and we're going to prosecute. So in response to the letter that was sent from the Department of Justice and Harmeet Dhillon with the Civil Rights Division, Attorney General Nick Brown put out a video he claims was to debunk, you know, mistruths about our election system. But of course, true to politician fashion, when he's debunking lies, he's just telling his own lies that we now have to debunk. Here's a clip.
Here's the first concern that people have raised, that non-citizens are voting in our elections or that people are casting ballots for people that have died. Here are the facts. To register to vote, the Washington Secretary of State verifies you are who you say you are through records through the Washington Department of Licensing and the Social Security Administration.
Okay, sure. They verify you are who you say you are, but you know what they don't verify? That you're a citizen of the country, which is central to the issue that we're talking about. And no, the state of Washington does not verify you are who you say you are through the Social Security Administration. Because in order to vote in the state of Washington, you don't have to provide your Social Security number. So I have no idea what he's talking about there. It's just a completely manufactured falsehood. And let's just look at the state's own information that it requires. So to register to vote in the state of Washington, either online, in person, or in mail, you need a current Washington State driver's license or permit, or a current Washington State ID card, or the last four digits of your Social Security number. So you don't need your Social Security number. You can have and use a current Washington State driver's license or permit and provide that. What's the problem with that? Well, in Washington State, we give driver's licenses to non-citizens. You don't have to give your Social Security number, your passport, or any proof of U.S. citizenship to get a driver's license in the state of Washington, because our state is very proud of the fact that it treats non-citizens the same way it treats citizens. And you can get a driver's license in the state of Washington by showing them any number of documents, none of which would prove that you're a U.S. citizen. And you're familiar with this. You know, there's the documents that you have to bring, and you can, you know, have like one standalone document. For instance, if I brought like my passport or something like that, and you just provide one document. But there's also an option to provide four B-list documents, one of which must have your name and your birthday. You guys, that includes a foreign ID or driver's license, a certified birth certificate or birth registration card from the U.S. or foreign. You can even show a school yearbook or certified copy by the school with a recognizable photo. You guys, you can show virtually anything. A government employee ID card, what is that going to do? They hire non-citizens in the state of Washington. So listen to Nick Brown one more time on
that. Here's the first concern that people have raised, that non-citizens are voting in our elections or that people are casting ballots for people that have died. Here are the facts. To register to vote, the Washington Secretary of State verifies you are who you say you are through records through the Washington Department of Licensing and the Social Security Administration.
So no, that's a falsehood. There is nothing in this whole process, as we just laid out, where you have to give a social security number to the state of Washington to get a driver's license or then in turn to register to vote. So I don't know what he's talking about with the Social Security Administration. That's just a lie. And as long as you get a driver's license, you can register to vote. And as we've discussed, I'll go to the greatest source I have to debunk what the Attorney General of the state of Washington is saying. We had on the Democratic Secretary of State, Steve Hobbs, and pointed out to him that you just have to attest to the fact that you're a citizen with no proof required whatsoever. And he knows that that is true. Here's a clip from our show.
We're basically asking people to attest through honesty that they're a citizen of this country when they register to vote.
I mean, that's the front end of it, yes.
Yeah.
But then the thing is, like, we have caught people that have done it, and there are consequences. So I hope that we don't have that situation. It's sad, but, you know, if they violate the law, they're going to be prosecuted. We have gone after people. We've gone after people that have voted the same election twice. And when I say we, I mean the county prosecutors, because it's county prosecutor function. So it's unfortunate, but that the law is the law. And so, you know, if you get caught, you're going to be probably prosecuted.
Right. But it's just the honor system. And how are they going to get caught? Somebody would have to snitch on them, because the state of Washington can't even catch them, because the state of Washington treats citizens the same as non-citizens. The state of Washington isn't collecting their social security numbers to get a driver's license or to register to vote. So they don't even know, even if they dig deep into their system. They literally would have no idea in most instances. They couldn't pick you out if you didn't use, you know, for me, when I registered, I'm sure I used my social security number or something. So if it's in a file, then they know. But if you use something else, they would have no way to prove it. And that's the central issue here that the Department of Justice is trying to point out, is you're not gathering enough data. And therefore, you can't provide us with enough data to prove who's a citizen and who's a non-citizen. This isn't rocket science, you guys. Here's more from another claim that Nick Brown is debunking with just lies.
At the national level, repeated studies have shown only a minuscule number of cases of non-citizens voting in an election.
Right. But of the ones they're able to identify, of the ones they're able to catch, and they have to be looking for it. So he... linked, when he put out this video, he said, for a closer look at this data that he just referenced, check out this guide from the Bipartisan Policy Center. So I clicked on the link to the Bipartisan Policy Center. It says, have there been documented cases of non-citizens voting? And it gives a couple examples. It says, Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose flagged 521 cases of potential non-citizens voting, but they found just one case in which a non-citizen was ultimately charged with voter fraud. Utah performed a citizenship review of its entire voter registration list. After a time-intensive multi-step review of more than 2 million registered voters, they identified only one confirmed instance of non-citizen registration and zero instances of non-citizen voting. Georgia, in October 2024, Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger announced that a citizenship audit of 8.2 million registered voters identified 20 non-citizens. But what's the key here? These are examples where they did a citizenship review. They did a citizenship audit of registered voters. And when they did that, they found very few who were registered who were non-citizens. Okay, but we haven't done that. Washington State hasn't done and doesn't have the data available to them to be able to do a citizenship audit, even if they wanted to, because they haven't collected enough data from people who are registering to vote with a driver's license that they could get without proving they were a citizen. And that's all the Department of Justice is trying to say, is you can't, Nick Brown, Steve Hobbs, you cannot sit in a room with the Department of Justice and tell them, you know, as a matter of fact, that there are not non-citizens voting. You can't do it because you don't collect enough data to be able to do it. And it could very well be that we don't have a lot. It could be one. It could be none. It could be 100,000. We're a sanctuary state after all. But we don't know. And you're choosing that. Why are you choosing that? Because if it's not a big deal, as you say, then okay, let's make sure
that we have a system in place where we're confirming citizenship when you get your driver's license and citizenship when you register to vote, and then we'll know for sure, and then it's not a big deal, right? Why are you being so stubborn on it? Why are you saying, like Nick Brown, oh, we're checking, you know, social security numbers, when you're not? Why are you lying about it? If it's not happening, why lie about it? If it's not happening, why obstruct the Department of Justice? That should get anyone very, like, even if you're not prone to conspiracy, even if you're not, you know, a conservative who has concerns about mail-in voting, doesn't it make you question why are they just not doing the most obvious thing, which is just, you know, asking for proof of citizenship at the point of voter registration? That would fix all of this. It's bizarre. All right, we want to follow up on a story that we talked about earlier this week. You'll remember the headline from the Tri-City Herald. Police claim Waugh Senate candidate directed stalking of Tri-City opponent's family. So this is a whole saga in a state Senate race in the 8th legislative district where current state Senator Nikki Torres, who was redistricted out of a seat, she's now running for state Senate in the 8th legislative district. One of her opponents is accused, Gabe Galbraith, of basically directing individuals to stalk her in an effort to prove or try to prove that she actually wasn't living where she says she was living. So there was this concern among some Republicans in the Tri-Cities that Nikki Torres, like, in order to run for this seat, was claiming to live in a certain place but was actually living in this other place. And so there is a guy who was arrested outside, or arrested for, like, stalking this home where Nikki Torres's daughter and granddaughter were actually living, taking pictures of them. Like, it was really bizarre stuff. And there's text messages that show that it was Gabe Galbraith's campaign that was sort of in cahoots with him to do this. So first things first, first update. The Franklin County Board of Elections has dismissed, they made an official decision yesterday that there isn't enough proof to show that Nikki Torres isn't living where she says she's living. So again, from the Tri-City Herald, the debate over whether a Tri-City lawmaker lives in her new district is over for now. A Pasco voter failed to provide evidence proving without a reasonable doubt that State Senator Nikki Torres does not live where she says she does. The challenge was an effort by some in Torres's own party to disqualify her from running in the 8th legislative district after she changed addresses earlier this year. So whatever the, whoever directed the stalking, whatever this looked like, was all for nothing because they weren't able to prove that she was living at this house that they thought for sure she was living at. All they got were photos of her daughter and her little granddaughter, and not her coming and going from this house. So we had reached out to Gabe Galbraith earlier this week, asking him about these allegations that he paid and directed this kind of loner to go and spend his time stalking Nikki Torres. And he hadn't gotten back to us at the time, which he's been on the show, you know, he's been a friend of the show, but he hadn't responded. Well, we did get a response from his attorneys. They put out a press release yesterday. I gotta say, it's bizarre. It's a bizarre press release. I mean, I've been in this arena for a long time, and there's a way to respond to a scandal, and there's a way to not respond to a scandal, and this is probably the worst press release that you could possibly put out and put forth. So I'll just read a little bit of it for you. It says, Gabe Galbraith issued the following response after the Franklin County Canvassing Board heard and decided the citizen voter registration concerning Senator Nikki Torres. It says, Mr. Galbraith has not been charged with any crime, categorically denies any illegal activity, and pledged to pursue every lawful avenue to identify who leaked confidential police records in the middle of an election. Okay, so this is going to be a theme moving forward, is they want people, they say the real scandal here is whoever leaked the police report about the guy who was arrested for stalking Nikki Torres. Okay, hold on to that for a second. But the first sort of argument that they're going to make, and this is probably what the defense for this guy, again, he's just kind of a nobody who they paid to allegedly to stalk Nikki Torres. They're claiming that the law allows them to be able to, like, sit outside the home and do everything they did to try to prove where someone, where a candidate lives. So in this press release, it says the law demands exactly, go back one, Nicole. The law demands exactly what was done here. It says under RCW, a residency challenge cannot rest on rumor. The statute expressly provides that a challenge may not be based on unsupported allegations, and it requires the challenger to swear under penalty of perjury that he exercised due diligence to personally verify with evidence or to state that the voter, where the voter actually lives. The June 2026 due diligence checklist on Franklin County's own challenge form runs from certified letters and property record searches to visiting the residential address and obtaining a sworn affidavit from someone at the address. Establishing who actually occupies a house is not surveillance for its own sake. It is the precise homework the legislature assigned. Okay, so just to be clear here, he's saying through this press release, through his attorney, I didn't do anything wrong. However, if I had done this, it's actually what the legislature requires and says, yes, you can go to someone's residence to try to prove that they do or do not live there. Now, of course, I would argue that if the allegations are true, it went well above and beyond going to someone's house, knocking on their door, getting like an attestation from them that they live there and not the other person. But it's just a fascinating sort of way to try to spin this. And then here again is that it says the leak, not the challenge, is the real scandal. The leak, not the challenge, is the real scandal. First of all, nobody is saying the challenge was a scandal. I don't think it's inappropriate to challenge where someone is living and to try to have them prove that they live where they say they live. The scandal was allegedly given some guy money to sit outside the home of a state senator's daughter and granddaughter and take pictures of them and stalk them. But then you're saying the leak, this is what I don't know who pays these people to come up with such bad press releases. This is going to make it so much worse. The leak is the real scandal. It says confidential investigative police records, documents no member of the public can lawfully obtain, were handed to a newspaper by an anonymous source days before the canvassing board hearing and days before the ballots mail on July 17th. This happened in a county where the elected prosecutor has endorsed Senator Torres before recusing himself. First of all, that's just false. I could at any moment get police records related to a criminal investigation and an arrest. Those are what we call public records under the law. They are not easy. They are not hard to obtain. And so the blame is that, oh, somebody leaked this behavior or alleged behavior to the press? That's what happens in political campaigns. That's what happens in every single political campaign in America. If your opponents have some thing they think will look bad for you, they're going to leak it to the press. And the press does its due diligence and decides whether it's worthy of a news report or not. And these aren't confidential police records. These are public records that anyone can get if they want to get them. And that's fair game. It is. I'm sorry. So to blame it on the media for doing what the media is supposed to do when it comes to political candidates, I mean, that's a little absurd. It's ridiculous. So I think your better sort of angle on this is to focus on, look, the law says that we can try to verify someone's address, and then you can squabble in court over whether the way in which you went about that was stalking or was done by the letter of the law. That's something for a court of law to determine. But I do think that Gabe Galbraith, his PR flackey, who was directing some of this, and then the random guy they got to do it are going to be in a little bit of trouble here for sure. And this just doesn't look great. It doesn't look great to blame leaks of police records. That's not a thing. It's not a thing. I would fire your attorneys, by the way. That is a Johnson and Orr. I would fire your attorneys because that is one of the worst press releases I've ever seen related to a potential political scandal. Just not how I would handle it. But who am I? I'm just a lady with a podcast. But Gabe's welcome to come on if he'd like to come on the show and talk a little bit more about this. We're happy to have him. If you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, Lord knows there's a lot of policies, and we just talked about, we'll probably talk more next week about this junk fees ordinance being proposed in the city of Seattle. And the bottom line is you need someone in your corner to help you navigate this time. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org. It is Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers, and it just makes sure that you have someone in your corner to help you navigate changing rules and regulations, changing screening protocols, forms, et cetera. And then they're advocating on your behalf all year long down in Olympia, and then even in a court of law, if necessary. They've got some really important property rights cases that they've been part of. So rhawa.org, you can become a member for about $260 a year. I think it's well worth the money. It is Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers, and they have events all year long talking about these issues and other political issues at play in Washington state. So rhawa.org. And with that, maybe my favorite story of all time, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right. If you use Nextdoor, I would be on the lookout for posts about the new income tax and the fight to try to repeal it. So Nextdoor is like a community page, essentially. It's hyper-localized. You're joined based on, you know, precisely where you live, individual neighborhoods, and then people post all sorts of stuff in there, you know, like, oh, somebody broke into my car, or whatever it is. So it's a way for a sort of community to come together, get information, share information, etc. So our friend Ari Hoffman, man, he's got good instincts. He's on his own Nextdoor page, and he sees this post from a guy in his neighborhood, right, named Michael Smith. And he shares a Seattle Times article. He says, millionaires are flocking to Washington. Isn't it time to add a modest 1% tax on property values? This property alone would raise $280,000 a year with such a small tax. Apply to all properties with a $1 million threshold like the millionaire's tax. Mayor Wilson already on board with these progressive tax ideas. And he's sharing a Seattle Times article that talks about a guy named Rodney Lewis, the fourth biggest tax producer in Texas, purchasing a $28 million Mercer Island residential property that has two homes on it. And so he's basically saying, hey, we should also, in addition to the really progressive millionaires tax, why don't we also just tax, you know, these mega homes, a 1% additional tax on property values, and saying, oh, wow, this would raise so much money. So Ari sees this and he decides to look into this guy, Michael Smith. So let's look at his Nextdoor profile. Looks like a nice guy. He's got a nice little smile there. Oh, View Ridge, Michael Smith, no big deal. So Ari's like, who is this guy, you know, in here posting this political stuff about progressive taxation? And so he does a reverse image search on his picture. And what does he find? It's a stock image. It is from iStock. It is a stock image model, not a real person, unless he just so happens to have been the model for iStock. But I find that hard to believe. In fact, it looks like an AI kind of model. But the only thing they did, they flipped it. You see that? Mm-hmm. They just mirrored the image. Oh, maybe if we flip it, people won't be able to do a reverse image search and find out that we're just a fake account. So some Looney Tune lefty or some organization like the WEA or the SEIU. And look, they are organized and smart. I will give them that. I guarantee that they have created a bunch of profiles like this in Nextdoor communities across the state of Washington. And it looks like just your friendly person next door saying, hey, millionaires taxes are cool. This is a good idea. We really need this. In fact, we should tax the rich even more money. And I mean, that's genius. Getting involved, people involved at a neighborhood to neighborhood level, making them think that one of their fellow neighbors, Michael down the street, supports a millionaire's tax, and just putting it in their brain that it's not so bad, right? If somebody in my neighborhood supports it, maybe it's not such a bad idea. I mean, they are diabolical. Diabolical people. So good for Ari Hoffman for doing a little bit of work on that, spotting it and being like, yeah, this is a stock image. So don't trust everything you read on Nextdoor. It might not be the friendly neighbor down the street. All right. I thought we'd talk about the time capsule that went in for the 250th birthday of America. So apparently, like, members of the congressional delegation, etc., got to put things in a, I don't even know how to read this date, 2276 time capsule. Sorry, yes. 22. So they put, Brandy, get it together. They put stuff in a time capsule to be unearthed in the year 2276.
So in 250 years, another 250.
Yes, correct. Thank you. That date really looks like a lot and we're not going to be alive then.
And I don't know who decided that Jay Inslee got to contribute to the time capsule.
Oh, you'll read on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you'll
so
find
this
out.
Is from the Washington State Standard. And look, it had to be something small, right? Because you can only fit so much stuff in the time capsule. Nicole thought their choices were really stupid. I didn't think they were horrible.
Well, I thought that some of them were stupid. I thought Marie does pretty good.
But, okay,
like,
so it says
the Republicans here.
So it says each of the 10 representatives and two senators got to provide something to the time capsule with one or more items they feel will give insight about Washington's residents, culture, and geography in 2026 to those who open the vault in 2276. Senator Murray put in a photo of the Nisqually Glacier, reasoning that most glaciers on the mountains will be drastically smaller, if not gone completely, in 250 years.
Global warming.
Isn't that what they've been telling us?
Yeah.
Rep. Kim Schreier offered a photo of Mount Rainier, crowned by clouds in the shape of a National Park Service ranger flat hat. Okay.
Right.
It's not even in her district, is it? Senator Murray also put in one of the limited edition orca cards created to mark Seattle's participation in the World Cup. Okay. Mm-hmm. And a print of Nooksack artist Louis Gongs entitled Good Day, Bad Day. That's fine. I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. Rep. Marie Glusenkamp Perez submitted a stone apple carved by the Tenino Stone Carvers Guild from Tenino Sandstone, quarried in Southwest Washington, the region she represents. There's a personal connection. Her great-great-uncle was a stonecutter in Tenino, and her great-grandfather worked at the same quarry that the sandstone for the apple came from. I think that's a pretty cool one, although, remember, she was criticized for her comments about apples, so I feel like she's trying to make amends.
Yeah.
Inslee, the former governor, snapped a selfie with Rep. Marilyn Strickland and Senator Maria Cantwell in a boat on the Nisqually River. Strickland provided it for the capsule. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So a picture of Inslee via Strickland.
Right.
He just had to get in there.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I just got to be in there.
I'm predicting.
A lot of pictures, blah, blah, blah. Rep. Jayapal submitted pictures of the Seattle skyline. I thought she'd put some sort of socialist memorabilia in there, so that's better than I thought. Mm. A couple members put in their own personal challenge coins, like
that's
Rep. Baumgartner and Susan Del Bene, whatever. Dan Newhouse submitted his coin plus this handwritten note. The American story is rooted in ingenuity and perseverance of the people, from the agricultural heartland of the Yakima Valley to the innovation of the Tri-Cities. The Central Washington spirit of hard work and stewardship continues to fuel our republic. As we look forward to the next 250 years, may future generations remember the resilience, foundational liberties, and bold optimism that define our great experiment in self-governance. That's the best one. So I think Dan Newhouse, I think, did the
it's
most
a nice
meaningful
letter,
one.
But
okay,
the
Nicole.
Letter.
Okay, how do you do? So we decided to ask subscribers in our show question today. What would you put, a small item, has to be small, that you would put in a time capsule to memorialize this point in the nation's history? And I think there's people who watch who aren't from Washington, so it could be something about our state, something about our country. So, Nicole, if you're going to make fun of everybody, what was it?
You know what I was
Why
just
are you
thinking
laughing?
About that? Because it was my idea, and I put it in there last night, and you would think
you're
I would have
she
come
literally
up
put it
with
there.
Something
Let's
good.
Let's do a show question about this. So what would you put in a time capsule? You don't have an idea, do you? You just made fun of everybody and you have not Jack.
I have nothing.
Worthless.
Yeah.
I'll go first.
Okay, you go first.
I think mine's easy. And it's not from like this exact moment, from this like era.
Mm-hmm.
Vaccine passport. I would take my vaccine passport. And I would put it in there.
This is what they subjected us
well,
to.
Well, but also, like, I think that in 250 years, it's very possible we're living under a communist government. And, like, this right? was, these were the first indicators that we were heading towards an authoritarian society. And how crazy and Looney Tunes it is. I'd take my, I have my vaccine passport still.
Okay.
It's, like, pinned on my wall
need it,
as
Randy.
A memory.
No, you never, might need to
never
get
using
it stamped
it again.
Again.
It's a reminder to remind me not to be so damn obedient next
there
time.
There you go.
They try
See?
To control the
we
populace.
Need that reminder.
Yeah, but I'd put it in the time capsule. Did you come up with something?
This is the
you know,
Nicole, why do I want people
it was
to know about
literally
it?
Her idea.
It was because I had looked at all of that stuff and Newhouse's letter, although sweet, I was like, ugh, like I look back at this and realize the turmoil we went through. Like, I feel like we're going through something right now, and that's not representative of it. That's just like, oh, okay, happy apple.
But you can't make fun of them. You don't have an idea.
I know. So, by the end of the show, I'll come up with something.
All right. We'll read
wow.
subscriber
I was just
ideas.
Very into show prep this morning. I
yeah,
didn't have time
apparently.
To think about myself.
All right. I'm going to read
okay,
subscriber ideas mm-hmm. who are going to provide
help
us
me.
More.
Matt Gilbert says, the Constitution, I have a feeling they will need it in 250 years.
Oh, good one.
Michelle says, a Bible. Brandon says, a make common sense great again hat. Julie B. says, a package of non-GMO seeds. Oh. Well, then they'll open it up in 250 years and it'll like create the next plague or something. I don't know. Let's see. Hydra Dog, I would not waste my time putting anything in it other than a letter describing how society destroyed itself with social media.
Yeah.
Yeah. A cell phone with a video comparing life in 1976 versus today and how radical folks have become. Don's wife says a smartphone. B. Larson says a cell phone to show them what it was exactly that destroyed man's ability to interact with people in a civil manner.
Ooh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Phone, to see the phone over the ages.
Yeah. Let's see. Matthew says a fentanyl pill and a note not to take it. Okay, great.
All right.
Great idea for that. Let's see. A lot of people said mega hat. Leland went down my thought path. A stupid freaking cloth face mask embroidered with the words never again. Nothing is more representative of how sheep-like and complacent a society can get that allows government and bureaucrats to run roughshod over it. Yeah, I don't disagree with that sentiment at all. So, Nicole, have you thought of anything?
You know, I really like that idea of the mega hat, and not because, you know, oh, mega. Mm-hmm. But I like that mega hat versus that the mask. I think that putting that in there as a true representation of where we are in this, in the, you know, the last 5 years-ish and saying like, and to see where it is then so they can compare like, wow, this is really the debate back then, right?
Yeah.
You know, true freedom versus control, really, and put a kind of note in there and describing what we're all going through in this time.
Yeah.
But
I would maybe put a picture of Leah Thomas at the top of a podium as a man or something. Fugitive Mama,
we were on the right side.
Yeah. Fugitive Mama says, I would donate this $20 I received. And she put a picture, and it's one of those with it. It's stamped on the back of the 20 that says Donald Trump lives here, because it shows the White House. It says Donald Trump lives here. So
I know who's some been doing ideas. A lot of stamping.
Who?
Oh, my cousin.
Them.
Oh, okay. No. I mean, I have a cousin. I mean, she stamps everything. Everything.
About, it says Donald Trump lives here?
Yep. On the back of every.
Why not?
I mean, it's illegal, but, you know, it's fine.
I've been telling people to do all sorts of illegal stuff.
So when I see people post it, I'm like, hey, look it. Somebody got your money. You
know, I told people yesterday to steal those stupid coloring books from public libraries and throw them in the trash.
Throw them in the trash. Stupid. Yeah, yeah. Anyway.
That was fun.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, I'll think of something good eventually.
It was fun for Nicole. All right. We'll get to national news and comments from the live stream after that. First, a whole bunch of you have taken the First Mark Challenge and are now saving money as a member of the First Mark family. And why would you not? Who doesn't like to save money? And the best part is, you know, it's not some like, oh, really quick, we're going to get you the cheapest insurance we can. No, they want to make sure, like, look, all of us work really hard and we're working towards a future and we want to make sure it's properly protected. So First Mark is always going to balance that. They want to make sure you have a good insurance that is going to protect you, and they want to make sure you have it at the best price. It's that simple. And they do all the hard work for you. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Take the First Mark Challenge. It's totally free. They'll review all your insurance, talk to you about your insurance needs, go out, shop the market. And like so many undivided viewers and listeners, you could be saved. And Steve just sent this to us. Saved over $1,800. Quote, it was a very smooth transaction. See, that's what I keep telling you. They make it so easy. He saved over $1,800. No brainer. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. They work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. All right, we knew it was coming. Graham Plattner out of the race in Maine. Oh my gosh, I'm going to play part of the stupid video he put out. But so now this clears the way for Democrats to pick a new nominee. How involved Graham Plattner will be in that remains to be seen. It seems like his campaign wants to be heavily involved. They want a candidate who sort of aligns with what his platform was, because that's the platform that voters selected in the primary. And I don't disagree with that notion, but the Democrats, I mean, they're going to Kamala Harris this. They're going to pick who they want and install them. And voters are just sort of like, your opinion doesn't matter. And so I understand the frustration over that. But, you know, maybe you guys should have realized sooner on that the guy with the Nazi tattoo wasn't going to be the best choice. So what really bothered me is I'm sitting here waiting. I think I was at home watching Fox News and they said,
they had this like sources say any minute Graham Plattner is going to drop out of the race. And so I was looking at his social media and then this video from him goes up. It's like 10 minutes long. And he doesn't get to the fact that he's dropping out for like 8 minutes. So I had to sit and listen to his rambling. Here's a little bit of it. A lot of touching of the stash. Say something.
We are suspending campaign operations.
Thank you. We cut out all the nonsense.
This is incredibly difficult because I know that some will think it's an admission of guilt, and it most certainly is not.
It kind of is.
We're not doing it because of the allegations. We're doing it because of the structures that are being taken away from us by those in power. I want to make clear, though, I intend to file my paperwork to withdraw. The process needs to assure that what comes next is reflective of the Mainers who on June 9th turned out and showed that they are desperate for a different kind of politics.
A lot of touch.
From the bottom of my heart, thank you. Thank all of you. And keep fighting. We're going to win someday.
You could have given me 10 seconds in a room with that guy at the beginning of this, and I would have told you it was a creep. You just have that feeling. You're like, nope, not at all. A lot of people are praising AOC because she decided never to weigh in on the race. Mm. And a lot of people are saying she clocked him. She used to be a bartender. She knows a creep when she sees a creep, you know? So at least give her credit for that. But yeah, I mean, he can't, even if he wanted to move forward, he couldn't because they said they wouldn't give any money to his campaign. You can't win a U.S. Senate campaign without the support of your own party. They, you know, would lose access to the voter rolls and the voter data and all this information that he would need to be able to run a legitimate campaign. So yeah, they pushed him out. And I don't know who they're going to push in, but they've only got a few days to decide. And
he kind of blames his own party there, which is funny because they were mostly backing him. So I don't really know who he's blaming there.
Right. He acts like, oh, our movement, which is a socialist movement. That's all the rage right now.
Yeah.
They backed the socialists everywhere. They were 100% behind it until it just became unfeasible because of the rape allegation. So, yeah, no, he acts like they didn't have his back. They were putting everything they had behind you and not Janet Mills, who was the establishment candidate. And she had to bow out early on. I mean, if you're being fair, you should probably just put Janet Mills in. But she's not the kind of candidate that he was. And I do agree with him that so let's just put this in terms that some of you might be able to appreciate better. Like, let's say that, you know, this last time around, Donald Trump ended up being forced out of the race at the last minute because of some sort of allegation. And let's say they put in Liz Cheney. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like the establishment, like non-MAGA, people would lose their minds.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think anybody who supported Donald Trump would want sort of a Donald Trump-like America first candidate to take the spot at the last minute. So I do agree with Graham Plattner.
Mm-hmm.
That's for better or worse, worse for America. That's what the people who voted in the primary wanted, and that's what they should get. So, all right. Speaking of other places in the country, it is Thursday. Is it Thursday? Yes. So this is when we check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State with my sister. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
Oh, poor Andrew Gillum. Well, not poor. I don't feel bad. So he was the former gubernatorial candidate for Democrats, lost, and he's had issues before, but he was arrested on drug possession charges.
Yeah, they found him with marijuana and methamphetamine. And this is just comes off a long history of the last 6 years. I think in 2020, he was found in a Miami Beach hotel room with somebody overdosing and methamphetamines.
Yeah.
And he only lost to DeSantis by 34,000 votes.
Thank God.
So he was a darling for the Democrat Party, and he has just fell from grace.
Yeah, I remember because he was the mayor of Tallahassee, and they really thought that he would win. He didn't. So he was arrested in Alabama on drug possession charges. And I also, weed, whatever, but, you know, if it's illegal, it's illegal. Meth, bigger issue, but he was driving erratically, and that was the reason that they pulled him over. But I also, when I hear arrested on drug possession, I'm like, oh, wow, because here, they don't arrest people for drug possession. You're just sort of, I don't even think they arrest people for erratic driving. So, but yeah, I hope he gets the help he needs. I'm just glad he's not in public life anymore. All right, so we talked about how the front runner for the governor's race in Florida, Byron Donalds, like, is refusing to debate. He doesn't think he should have to grace the other candidates with his presence on a debate stage. And the Florida GOP is not going to host a debate because they don't want him to debate either. But a debate happened anyway.
Yes, a debate happened anyway. So a prominent podcaster down here, a lot of people are familiar with PBD podcast. It's Patrick Bet David.
Yeah.
He hosted them on Thursday night last week for a very much needed debate.
But it was not nice. Byron. Byron didn't show.
He was invited, but he did not show up because he doesn't think he needs to debate these people.
And he probably doesn't, but here's a clip.
No.
Hire me as governor. We will ban every data center in all 67 counties.
Well, James, let me ask you a question. How do you think the people in the cities and counties are going to feel about the state government coming in and taking control of that? Let me finish talking, man. Please, come on. Look, the reality is they want local leadership.
That's a really nice debate stage for a podcast. Now that's given us a goal. We need to host a debate.
I think so, too. It was like very cinematic. It kind of felt like Fight Night, like when the intro to it came in. And that's why I love debates. Like you get to like go face to face with each other, and there's no, you know, you don't get to source notes. You just have to go with what you know. And I love debates for that reason. And it got a little feisty in some parts, which is another reason I love debates. But it was nice to hear them. And I know none of them will probably end up winning the primary, but it would have been nice to have Byron there as well.
Yeah, people don't like when candidates won't debate. So I don't think that's going to go well for Byron. I'm not saying he's going to lose, but, you know, especially with Trump's endorsement. So here's some drama. So DeSantis has not endorsed in the governor's race yet, correct? But his lieutenant governor is running, Collins. And there's some beef maybe, though. So my understanding of this is, and the Republican primary is August 18th, so that's not too far away. So Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins, he's like tried to say, basically, I'm the lieutenant governor, so it just makes sense that I'm going to be the governor next. But he has this strained relationship because, so top aides to DeSantis and the attorney general, James Uthmeyer, they think that Collins' wife is behind an X account trashing DeSantis. Am I getting that right?
Yes, you are getting that right.
Drama.
Sorted as it sounds, that is exactly what's happening. So basically, this burner account came out kind of trashing DeSantis for not, you know, backing Jay earlier in the race.
Okay.
And in amongst other things. And then apparently behind the scenes, there's just been a lot of drama between DeSantis and Jay Collins because of this. And it's just been brewing for a while. So this X account came out, and now, you know, Uthmeyer and DeSantis are kind of like his camper, accusing Jay Collins and his wife of creating this account. I don't know if it's to try to get DeSantis to finally openly give his endorsement, but I think DeSantis isn't going to touch this race with a 10-foot pole.
Not before the primary. And his endorsement means something. And if he wants to run for president, he wants to make sure that, you know, whoever he chooses wins, or maybe he'll just stay out. But so this is a Politico story, and they said DeSantis hasn't weighed in on this, but a senior administration official in his administration, they were granted anonymity to talk about it, said Collins has, quote, proven to be a constant source of drama and toxicity. Him and his wife have proven to be dramatic, and it's now culminated in an embarrassing debate performance and the potential end of Jay's political career. So sounds like there's no love lost, burner account, anonymous sources talking to Politico. I guess there's drama in every state. All right, Miranda, that's where we'll end it today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Meow. Always interesting to see a little political drama elsewhere, not just Washington State. And that was pre-taped because Miranda's not on the show today, because people are like, Miranda's not in the comments. Where is she? She's off today, but Nicole and I did our best to pick some winning comments from all of you. So let's get to subscriber comments on what's happening in Chinatown. Chip B. Fontoast says, The business owner, sometimes it's like a trying to get me to say something. Yeah, yeah. You got to turn your mic on, Nicole.
Like the Simpsons.
Yeah. The business owners and residents of Chinatown CID should sue the crap out of the city of Seattle for allowing this nightmare to happen. $100 million sounds good. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, if you're creating such a horrible environment, these people are paying taxes. They're paying taxes as a business. And this is what they get. You should give them their taxes back.
Yeah. So on junk fees, Lynn says, can we also get rid of all the junk fees when I license my car?
Yeah. No kidding. Oh, yes.
Lots of junk.
Yeah, because Jerry says, but the government can nickel and dime you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the government nickel and dimes the hell out of you. And look, and we'll have on RHA advertises on our show, and we'll get some with RHA to defend sort of their position on this next week. Because, like, look, I agree. If you're not telling me I'm going to be given a fee for it, like, you got to tell me. But as long as you tell me, I have an opportunity to rent from you or not rent from you. Right. So I agree that nothing should be hidden, but I don't know if these are hidden. Like, if you're paying a pet fee, you know you're paying a pet fee.
Right.
And the other thing is, if you get rid of these fees, what are they going to do? They're just going to tack it onto your rent.
And then everyone gets it. So then you get that fee for a pet, whether you have a pet or not.
Right. It's not like I think that landlords are harmless and are always like held harmless and everything and are always doing everything like right. It's a free market and you can either rent or not rent. And I don't understand.
And as far as the pet fees, there's a reason for it. I mean, they do destroy things sometimes.
And then your house smells like a cat, and dogs are perfect, but cats ruin rentals. Let's see. Country Guy. It's easy to call things junk fees when you've never attempted to run a business. How many of the junk fees are the result of new taxes? Mm-hmm. All right. You want to go to No Way?
Yeah, No Way says, did the Seattle mayor plan to put Elmo on the podium while she made her
That
escape?
Person did sound like Elmo.
It did. It's just funny because the fee for pulling a fire alarm, I don't think that's what we're talking about here. Like, that's not a rental junk fee.
Yeah.
That's a fee for using or, you know, calling the fire
when there was no fire
response, when there is no fire response.
Yeah. Let's see. Tamara Elva says, I live in Port Orchard, rural town between Gig Harbor and Bremerton. New multifamily building is going nuts in this small town. They now have a foot ferry during commuter hours direct from Southworth to Seattle for all the techies. Rents have skyrocketed and our local young adults that have grown up here can no longer afford to live. This is largely due to not enough rentals in Seattle. Our infrastructure is suffering miserably. Yes, yeah, so there's a lot of consequences to this. When Seattle's housing market is changing, you know, people move out. And then, I mean, even where I live, you know, 30 minutes out of the city now, like the cost of housing has grown exponentially because now you have a lot of techies who left Bellevue and are moving out.
Although that it's part of the system, right? Like after they left, there was a bunch of people that got up that were homeless. Like one lady said she lived in Tent City and she wants to get rid of junk fees so she can afford to rent again. And this other guy said he lost his job so he lived in his car in Seattle. And so move out. That's what you do is go someplace cheaper.
That you can afford.
Yes. Yeah. So if you can't afford something, go somewhere else and live somewhere you can't, especially if you don't have a job that's keeping you in the city.
Well, it's like when most people go to buy their first house, they're not going to buy it in a major metropolitan city because they're not going to be able to afford it.
Right.
So they go to the burbs. You start a family, you go
Same
to the burbs.
Same thing with rent.
You know? Like, look, I'm not saying that there can't be improvements in certain areas, but we have to live in reality as well. And there's a lot of things standing in your way from having an apartment. If you're living in a homeless encampment, there's a lot of things that we need to get right to get you in an apartment before junk fees.
She
you know what I mean?
She was also the one with a dog there. And I was like, that poor dog.
Yeah, I know. on the bot situation on Nextdoor, Chris Lundstrom says, this is the reason I left Nextdoor. Too many BS postings. Yeah.
Who's on Nextdoor? I mean, it's so...
It's like LinkedIn. Anonymous. Who's on LinkedIn?
I don't get it.
Yeah.
So on the time capsule, Greg Oleka says, put a letter in there explaining why everyone left Washington.
Yeah, because they'll be like, 250 years, Washington? I've never heard of that state. That was a state?
It'll be part of the... Seattle will be part of Oregon.
Cascadia.
Western Washington will be part of... Or Eastern Washington will be part of Idaho.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On Plattner resigning, Todd Welch says, watching the Democratic talking heads act like they never supported Plattner, these people were fully behind him until it was clear that he could not win. Right. That's the key. It's not about the rape allegation. Mm-hmm. It's about the rape allegation ruining his ability to win. Mm-hmm. So you want to read the last one?
Yeah. From Tribe Willoughby.
Willoughby.
I totally believe that consuming the mainstream media is worse than cigarettes.
Yeah, probably. Worse for your health, for sometimes. Sure. Worse for your mental health, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, Nicole, thank you. Mm-hmm. We'll get to our closing sanity check momentarily. First, we talked about it earlier, a ton of homes hitting the market right now, which if you're thinking about selling your home, that could freak you out a little bit. Like, oh my gosh, there's a lot of competition out there. What do I need to do? Wes can help you out with this. You can still get the same results that you could get a year or 2 years ago. You might just have to put a little more work in or be a little more thoughtful about the process. So Wes can give you a free market analysis, which will basically set the stage. Here's what the market is doing in your neighborhood, et cetera. And then they can go from there. Jim H. gives Wes and his team 5 stars. Says, we packed our bags, hit the road to a new state, but we jump at the chance to work with Wes again in a heartbeat. Together, his team turned a long distance deal into a breezy walk in the park from beginning to end. Some things you might have to think about doing. First of all, the marketing of your home in a market like this matters. You know, the pictures, the videos, how your listing looks, it has to stand out. Wes and his team, you'll see if you peruse their website at listings they've sold, you'll see what makes their listings special. And then it also matters, you know, when it comes into, when you walk into your door, that it actually looks as good as it did in the listing. And Wes can help you with staging. He can help you with cosmetic upgrades, all of the things you need to sell your home for top dollar. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, we liked this cut because I think, you know, socialism is the language of the lazy. That's really what I see it. Socialism is the language of the lazy and the entitled. And President Donald Trump, there's a reason he doesn't like socialists and communists. There's a reason he doesn't like the takers, because he has been a creator his entire life. And whether you like him or not, you cannot deny that the man is an incredibly hard worker, especially for someone of his age. Secretary of the Interior Doug Burgum was asked about this in a conversation with Politico.
You know, President Trump is, as you know, is a prolific worker. It works like 20 hours a day. Kevin, Kelly know that. These guys are good friends. They connect with him. I'm sure Kevin's had calls at all hours of the night. It's nothing special that he's calling me. Yeah. He's called, you know, if his staff goes to bed at 10 and he's still got a couple of phones in his hands, he's dialing, you know, long into the night.
So what's he asking when he calls?
Well, he's usually asking about progress reports on how things are going, or he may have, when he's either, you know, flying to Andrews in his helicopter, spotted something, or he may have been driving, you know, to an event in town and he's seen something out the window. I mean, he doesn't miss a detail. And then he'll be like, what about this? What about that? Are we working on this?
Yeah. Like him or hate him, Donald Trump, I don't think anyone can argue that he cares about doing a good job and he cares about outcomes. And that's what he wants to see. And that's what he expects of those around him. And I think in this era of socialism and gimme, 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 I think he's a great example for people. A couple super chats I missed. Old Sub Sailor, hit the like button, everyone. Support the show. I agree. Sean Miller, buying a boop. Thank you. Ryan Mace, thank you for your super chat. Lil Miss J on the time capsule. I would like to have a picture of Charlie Kirk in memory of someone who really tried to make a positive difference in our day and time. And Nicole's cat says, dogs destroy us. Cats are perfect. Agree to disagree. That has been, we have a great guest on Sundays with Subscribers this week. William Kirk of Washington Gun Law is joining us to talk about some key 2A cases heard by SCOTUS, rulings, and then cases they have agreed to take that will dramatically impact gun rights in Washington State and elsewhere. So if you'd like to sign up to support our show, catch that interview with our friend William Kirk, you can do that. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and catch all the episodes of Sundays with Subscribers. We have in-depth interviews that we're not able to sort of really take the time to have the conversations on the live show during the week on interesting topics. I think we have a lot of fun. So undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. So Subscribers, I'll see you on Sunday. The rest of you, I will see you on Monday. Toodaloo, have a fantastic weekend.